That was a very warm introduction, and for a moment I thought I was dead. This is the most interesting experience for me. This is only the second time that I can recall in being before the public almost a half century that I've spoken at the Masters. In the many, many years of public speaking, out here particularly, I've spoken at the Friars and their assemblage of membership. And tonight, the words of Isaiah come to me. Tonight, I break bread with the Gentiles. I have made this year some 103 speeches, most of them throughout the country, for the reason of getting people to aid the violent democracy of Israel. I have left no cone unturned in my jaw. And while this seems to be a wonderful thing and good for my conscience to try to find something godly in this last act of my life that I am playing, it's rather arduous and hard. And they don't have the eclat, nor the brevity, nor the keen sense of showmanship at these places where I speak. For example, I will get in a small town and a chair lady will greet me. And she's a delightful lady, very earnest and enthusiastic about her work as a chair lady. She will be covered with orchids from her relations, and he meets me at the airport and said, "Oh, Mr. Jessel, we're so pleased you've come to speak to us in our town. And before you go to the public luncheon, you must come to my house and meet a few of my friends." And at her house, I meet more people than will come to the luncheon. Then she has become fascinated and intrigued with the word that is used for public speaking. The word is agenda. Like we have program for the theater or scorecard for a sporting event, it's agenda for a speaking function. And she's in love with the word. She will never have the provocation to use it again, because I will see that she is not the chair lady again. And she will say, "Mr. Jessel, we have a wonderful agenda for today. And you speak my husband. He also has a fine agenda. And he's speaking in some other place, you know." However, I would not for the life of me have anyone believe that whatever talents I have as public orator are given to only one religious denomination. I speak for Protestant organizations, Catholic organizations, the Muslims I'm not so close anymore. Delightful experience but a few short years ago to the kind offices of Mike Conway, who arranged for me to come to Chicago to speak to a glorious organization, the LaSalle Catholic Academy of Chicago, Illinois, from which emerged many merchant priests and many priests, as a matter of fact, in the club. And this is a wonderful feeling for me. I was the only one of my religious persuasion among 1,700 Catholics. And yet I felt so at ease because I knew that no one there would steal my stuff. And as I recall it, as eminence, the late Cardinal Scritch began the evening with an invocation, blessing the Lord God for the bread which cometh from the earth. And then later on, I was introduced. Of course, as he did so, everyone performed the stations of the chorus, as I did likewise by religious courtesy. And then later on, during my address, I remember saying that Monsignor Shea, who was sitting next to me, seemed rather surprised that I so quickly and accurately performed the stations of the chorus. The Monsignor had utterly forgotten, I said, that a relation of mine started this whole thing. Then you people picked it up later on. But this Monsignor Shea had a great sense of humor, and he told me a story, which I told that very night, which, regardless of having, you may have heard it before, but not as well told as you do now. I cannot pleasure myself at this late age. But this setting being such a romantic one, this story is in order. And it's the story of a Catholic girl and a Jewish boy who are ardently in love with each other. But because of this supposed difference in belief in Almighty God, these two lovers are torn asunder. Both of them brokenhearted, and each family vying with the other. Let her turn, let him turn, and so it goes. and their upstart. And finally, the Irish Catholic mother, wiser in ways of the world by far. Sister, daughter Mary, now look here. You're a girl and he's a boy. And therefore, he must be more ardent and can be more demonstrative than you can be. Now, you're selling a bill of goods about the joys of Catholicism, about the consolation of the confessional. Sell him a bill of goods that if he turns Catholic, he'll be married and we'll all be happy. And the girl came over a couple of weeks later and said, Mama, I just left Max Cohen and I sold him. He's going to turn Catholic. And her mother said, fine, and he's the wedding day, but she said, never stop selling him. And then one night, almost on the eve of the nuptial, the girl returned home and threw herself upon the bed and cried like a child. What's wrong? Said the mama. She said, the wedding is off. They didn't you sell him? She said, I oversold him. Now he wants to be a priest. I would have you know that I am always accompanied by a series of notes for self-protection. And also because, as I say, I make so many speeches. I will speak, the Lord willing, at luncheon tomorrow in Toronto. Unless Sammy Davis is a swim act, then I'll speak in the evening as there are. But in the many years that I have served as the toastmaster for the friars here, these are a lot of directions here, and certainly in all the years, I've always looked forward, not to speak, to sort of sit out and get drunk and have a lot of fun. And so I designated as the new abbot of the friars as Frank Sinatra. And Mr. Sinatra, because of the many things that he has to do, hasn't been as diligent an abbot and hasn't shown up at any of the meetings. Well, he just blew off a princess, so why does he care about a few Jews, you know? And I say that as the abbot of the friars, Mr. Sinatra is as attentive as I was as a husband, as I recall. But I stand before you this evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I am most happy, and you ought to be congratulated as well. Not because of me, but because of this most worthy and highly talented guest of ours. And in order that I am your toastmaster, it is right that I'm your toastmaster. Because I am closer to this girl's career than anyone west of Albuquerque. And I recall this very well, and therefore I've written it here, so I don't make any mistakes. But making this many speeches, I wind up calling her Tripsy Fraganza. It was a long, long time ago when I first met this talented child doing an act with her sisters and her mother called the Gum Sisters. And this is not in the manuscript, but this is how she happens to be called Judy Garland. And I wear this because I do have trouble with this eye. And I'd rather have people say it's an eccentric than the poor bastard is blind. Jesus, I'm doing Toronto. I had just divorced my wife, and I was ready, or rather engaged to one of the lovely ladies of our city, Miss Talmadge, and I had to pay an alimony of about $300,000. And I had $9, which looks quite as large. So I tried to do as much as I could, and I played at the Chez Paris, the nightclub, three times a night, and at the Oriental Theater, five times a day. And I did everything. I played clubs, I made speeches, performed circus, I did everything you could think of. And on the bill, On the bill were the Gum Sisters. And the Gum Sisters consisted of the girls and Mother playing the piano, and then a tiny thing, she couldn't have been more than 8. We set up on the piano, and in a sultry voice and with the full heart of almost a grown and matured woman, sang a Helen Morgan song, He's Just My Bill. Now, we had a very long show, and I was sort of girlish in those days. I wanted to stay on a long time. And I took most of the program, and the management came back and said, well, we got too long a show, and we're going to pay the Gum Sisters off, and we won't use them, and Crosby, Phelps, we'll let them go. And Ben's Beatles to open the show. So I said, you can let the Beatles go, because they're anti-Semitic anyway. And Crosby and Phelps, but I said, don't let the little girl go. Keep the little girl, and we'll find some way if she just comes on to do the one song. And then during the week we went on, and I learned from the letter. Now, ladies and gentlemen, little Francis Gum. And it sounded like a Sis Hopkins kind of a thing. And audiences weren't ready for this warm, sensitive, punctual humanity that she was even then as a child. So I said to Mother one day, I don't like that name, Francis Gum. I think somebody called her Pinky gets the side, which I hated. That'll be a nice thing. Sis and Pinky at the combo. So, what the hell did I write all this stuff on? So finally, I had a Filipino ballad, and I remember him well because I still owe him a few dollars. And he, during one of the performances, off show one day, she was ready to go on, and he said to me, we got a phone call from Max Gordon that Judith Anderson opens in a play at the Maxine Elliott Theater, some foreign play, and you ought to send her a wire. And I immediately dictated the very handy kind of wire. Dear Judith, may this night add another rose to the garden of successes that entwine your fair head. Or some, you don't talk like that. And then I immediately came out on the stage and said, now, ladies and gentlemen, a young lady who is destined to go very far in the amusement business, Miss Judith Garland. And I said, you, baby, and you came out. Is that true?
Well,
because in those days, everybody, you had to have a stage name. I was George McKinley when I put on. And people who went into the theater always changed their names. This is Dacus. This goes back into the days of the Greek plays of Euripides, who was the Scourist of Athens in the long run. I know we had a girl there. Girl from Janik was there by the name of Gladys Bloomberg, who later became Beverly Vista Glendale, we call her. It happens all over. We have a great artist in our fair city who was born in Lebanon, right near in the shades of the prophets. When he went on the stage here in America, he changed his name to a crooked Australian jockey, Danny Thomas. His name is Amos Jacobs. Did you know that? His name is Danny. Don't look like Danny Thomas. Can't read that. Anyway, it would have made no difference what Miss Garland was called. You could have called her Allegrina, Minnie Haha, or Winnie Handel, but nothing would make any difference. All right. just I don't want to do. And now to the ladies and gentlemen who graced this fair day. At most functions that I serve, there's nothing. But at most places that I speak, the introductions and most of the speeches are much too long. I'm in around the country, I'm introduced as a rule by a rabbi, a very happy prophet of a clergyman in Israel, whose function it is, as the cardinal did, to bless the bread which the Lord God bringeth on the earth, and sit down. But he don't want to do that. Because he sees before him more people than he'll see to a young kipper, you see? I generally warn speakers on almost every occasion that the best speech ever made in the history of our fair country is Mr. Lincoln's address at Gettysburg, which runs 1:45. Even if he stuttered, it wouldn't take over 2 minutes. I know, of course, it isn't necessary to hear it out. I have some more stuff for us, nothing. Nothing. Oh, there's another thing that the postmaster does. He says, I'm going to present to you several people to take a bow. Not to speak. Hold your applause till they get finished. This is the most awful schmuck thing I've ever heard in my life. But somebody there's got an aunt or a husband, somebody, hold applause so there's a dribble, you know, for nothing. So when I bring these people, you can applaud as long as you like. Well, we're Toronto now. I present to rise and accept your warm applause, the distinguished gentleman of Hollywood. I mention the word with a bomb and a car because it is so deserving, and he has a warm association with the guest of honor. He is all things that you can think of. Producer, great musician, showman extraordinaire, and producer, and warmly and successfully associated with Judy Garland. I want you to meet Mr. Roger Eden, ladies and gentlemen. Now, gentlemen, who's made that very, very happy transition from Budapest to Hollywood. And with an atom-like approach, he has conquered this fair city of ours, Baghdad, on the close-up. How about that? Anyway, one of his pictures, which I'm not going to mention. Of course, a lot of people who come from Hungary here are not as well liked as the gentleman who will arrive before you. In fact, there has been a very, very harsh way of talking about Hungarians. And I think this stems from the fact that the Hungarian character seems to stem from the Hungarian cookbook. Because as you open the Hungarian cookbook, the first thing, how to make an omelet, steal 2 eggs. Well, I'm very happy indeed to be a great friend of this very eminent producer of motion pictures, Mr. Joseph Fessler. At one time it was said that a woman's place is in the home. Later in this free America of ours, we showed the world that a woman's place is any place where she has the ability to serve. And so a lady who is a great judge here in the southern state of California, Judge Lilly. My co-player and dear friend, Mr. Benny, was the first pastor at a luncheon the other day. I believe it was in your honor. And he asked me, he said, I do want something to say about one of the guests. My writers or myself, I mean, this is something in your milieu, because this is a lady of great tenderness and gentility. It is from Miss Dunn. So I gave him a few lines, and one particularly suggests itself in the presentation of this pink lady and her king. I think it befits her in this way. So she is as gentle as the sound of a pearl dropping into a satin purse, Miss Janet Leigh. Say something for the both of you.
Yes, for all of us. Well, all I can say is that this is not my line, except that it's anyone's line to say how much you like someone and love someone. There must be over 2 million people in this world that love and adore and respect Judy Garland. And how nice it is for me, as one of them, to be able to say it publicly, Judy, I love you, I respect you, and I admire you.
And may I say, sir, witness this coming event is soon in the offing. May it be as good looking as both yourself and your sweetheart. I guess they can't see why I care, or they would have known what to do. And now another happy prospect of Hollywood and of the amusement business. A handsome man and a beautiful woman, a fine actor and a fine actress on the international scene of only Hollywood, Mr. and Mrs. James Mason. I have the honor to present you at this time a fine actor who not only acts but gives of his time and his talents to good causes for people of all races, creeds, etc., etc. Tonight he will rise and say a few words in salutation of our guest of honor. I once presented him as the only full-blooded Jewish Indian in the United States. Mr. Jeff Chandler.
Thank you, Georgie. Ladies and gentlemen, honored guests and Judy. When I received the invitation to come sit on the dais honoring Judy, I was a little bewildered, really, because I figured the dais would consist of people who are very close to the guest of honor. And much as I would like to be able to say I'm close to Judy, I'm not. And I don't mean to sound harsh. We haven't met too often socially. I think I've been through the Lux home once or twice. Enjoyed myself tremendously. So that had to be out. That couldn't be the reason why. And then I thought maybe it's because our daughters have gone to school together. They might want that kind of a relationship. And I figured that was too far out. It occurred to me tonight, looking at the dais, that maybe they wanted someone up here who could give just the opinion of a fan. Someone who didn't know Judy too well, but someone who had enjoyed every moment of her performances for as long as he can remember her performing. And Judy, as a fan, I'd like to list myself not just among the 2 million that Janet spoke about, but way up on top and at the top of those 2 million, I have gotten so much pleasure, so many thrills from the things that you've done that I'd like to be considered as one of your biggest and baddest fans ever.
Thank you.
I thought surely he'd shoot an arrow into the air. I'd like to see that. In fact, I've written a new story for you. The Mata and the Arrow is over. I'll play the Mata. You know, the other day I read a poem in French, if you please, called La Belle Dame sans Merci, A Lovely Lady Without Mercy or Compassion. And the thought to me of how many women there are out here who write about movie land. La Belle Dame Merci, they may be good looking, but they write without affection, mercy, or compassion. We have with us tonight a fine lady who, more than anyone else in her profession, has realized that it is because of the movies and the people in it that she herself has reached great recognition throughout the land as a newspaper woman. She is adhered to the old adage of not fighting the hand. And she has defended this noble profession of ours on every occasion. We embrace her, the will of us.
Thank you, George. Those are very pretty words. I'm very happy to be able to say something about Judy Carroll, whom I've known ever since he was that high, and whom I love very much. Like Jeff Chandler, I'm a great fan of hers, and I'm very thrilled for her tonight, because I know what it means. to get his recognition. I was the first woman to be invited by the men. Judy is a little girl with a great big head and a great big heart. I think George chose very wisely when he called her Garland, because her songs are a garland of roses around all of our necks. And I'm not prepared to make a speech. This isn't a very good speech, but I do love Judy, and I'm happy to take tribute to her.
And now I have the great pleasure of presenting to you a young man who came to pictures and was continued only a very pretty boy who was able to jump off Egyptian balconies out at Universal. With the aid of tights and a curved sword borrowed from the Western costume. But the plans have changed, and these are daily plans. He has now been proclaimed for his performance in The Defiant Ones as one of the greatest young actors in America, Tony Curtis.
Thank you, George. Thank you, everybody. We all know why we're here. We should all vote no on Proposition 18. And besides that, we are here to pay tribute to what I consider the most wonderful woman in show business today. A tremendous talent and a lovely, lovely person. I've had the privilege of knowing her now for the last few years. And I deem it a great honor and a pleasure to say I love you, Judy Love.
Thank you.
That story is yours. Look good and get the hell off. The quickest rise to popularity, and most deservedly so, is the story of this next young gentleman. He has found the amusement world his oyster. Singer, dancer, mimic, musician, comedian, and dramatic actor. All in this gleaming piece of ebony that shines so brightly on the amusement horizon. There's been some talk, I understand, in the last few months, that he would convert his religion to Judaism. I didn't warn him. We are not a religion who seeks converts. I merely told him that there were certain rituals and rigors, one particularly in becoming a Jew, that when one is an infant child, it doesn't hurt much. I also told him to give this great, great concern, because I said, I realize you have been so kind to your kin, your uncle and your father, and the William Morris office have a piece of you. Can you afford to lose? I have another one here. Oh, yeah, this is rather poetic. As we grow older, the tiniest cut seems the most unkindest cut of all. But whether he be Christian, Jew, Muslim, or Buddhist makes no difference in our business, thank the Lord, the amusement business, and it shouldn't, and it doesn't. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the great talents of all time, Sammy Davis Jr.
Thank you very much, Jethro, Judy, distinguished members of the dais, and ladies and gentlemen. I am very thrilled to be here for a number of reasons. Foremost, first, as everyone has said already,
to honor a very dear, wonderful, wonderful human being and a great performer. The fact that I am here is such a big deal to me because this is my first venture within these Hollywood walls. And I would like to think that maybe sometime along the way, when the final book is written, if it's ever on show business, they mention Garland, if I may paraphrase the great Shakespeare, they might say, this was the noblest woman of them all. Because if she is, you are a mother. I said that last phrase for Frank, but he couldn't be here. But however, I only know one way to show my appreciation, if I may, Judy. Just could I sing a song?
Yes. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man sitting at the piano now is a gentleman by the name of Morley Stevens, who is my conductor and arranger. Judy is the field. My story is much too sad to be told, but practically everything leaves me totally cold. The only exception I know is the case when I out on a quiet spree, playing vainly the old and weird, and I suddenly turn and I see your fabulous face. I dig your face. I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't boot me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that Miss Garland, I get a kick out of you? Now some cats may go for cocaine. I'm sure that if I took even one sip, it would bore me terrifically too. But let me tell you, baby, I get a kick out of you. Why, I get a kick every time I see you standing there before me. I get a kick 'cause it's plain to see that all of we, you are so, oh, so weak. They told me I was very chic, that's right. I get no kick in the plane, flying on high with some chick in the sky is my idea of nothing to do. But I get a kick, I get a boot, I get a kick out of you. When you sing your divine, man, you always are so fine. When you move on the stage, why, Miss Garland, you're the rage. You're really too much. You got a magic touch. I dig you the end, and I'm pleased to say you're my friend. Yes, I get a kick out of you. This
is a very wonderful thing to have people in the business and to do something and it's received nicely, but I must confess quite honestly that it becomes sort of a panic when this happens now, this particular situation. You know, you dream. At night when I was coming here, I thought, see, wouldn't it be nice if I was a hit and the people applauded? It would be nice. You know, no, seriously, this is true. It's not a gimmick. But as you stand here like this, and you know, I was supposed to originally do two numbers, but I figured I had you, I'll go, you know. So now you're standing here saying, gee, I'll do another number, but you almost must think, as I know every performer in this room does when this happens to them. You say to yourself, should I do another number? And if you do another number, you know there's got to be at least eight people in the room who say, he was good till he did the last number. It's like a losing thing, you know. Judy, is there any, this is your night. Is there any number that you'd like to hear? I'll be happy to sing it if you know. Anything special? Black Magic? Okay.
You should be ready for Paul Dibber.
You might not make that motion. That old black magic has me in a spell. I got that old black magic that you weave so well. I got those icy fingers that I feel inside. The same old witchcraft where your eyes meet mine. I think it's only fair, a few of these people couldn't come, so they should think it. Natural. A time, oh tingle, that I feel inside. And then that elevator starts to slide. Billy X. Bass.
And down I go, round and round I go. Like a leaf that's caught in the tide.
Tony Bennett.
I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name and I'm aflame.
Don Monroe.
The flame is hot and burning desire and only a kiss can burn out the fire.
Yeah. Francis.
Now that single that I feel inside, and then that elevator starts its ride, and down I go, round and round I go, like a leaf that's caught in the tide.
Frankie Lane.
I should D-O-E, but what can I do? I hear your name, and I'm whistling.
Mr. Dean Martin.
Whistling. With such a burning desire, that only your kiss, you know, she'll put out of the fire.
Oh, you're the lover I have waited for. You're the one that made had me create and make.
Billy Daniels, it's Walter Brennan. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You gotta get yourself a horse, get a good horse, son. Yeah, yeah.
under that old black magic collar.
You're a dirty robber.
Old black magic collar. Uh-oh, get out the collar. Old black magic collar. You four men go with him, the rest of you follow me. Under that old black magic
collar.
I now hereby make you a Jew. From now on, you shall be known as Sammy of Rommel Hatchfogel Davis. In my introductions, I neglected to asterize a very talented young lady from Canada, who is with us tonight, Miss Cindy Conroy. You may think anything you like, ladies and gentlemen. But it's only wishful thinking on my part. And now, ladies and gentlemen, without the aid of sweet-scented manuscript, I shall bring to this microphone your guest of honor with a few short words and a short word portrait of her, who I have known since I told you as a tiny child. For there's not been any primrose past, and any young come lately who are around these corners listening in to what an easy song and dance it has been for this great talent. It might be well to again go to the immortal bard and speak the phrase, sweet are the uses of adversity, like the horned toad wears yet a precious jewel in his head. I only have one phrase to present Miss Carlin to you. No one, only the late great Al Jolson, has given the majesty to a popular song, as has your guest of honor, Miss Judy Hopp.
Thank you so very much, and thank you, George. George is on his way to Toronto. But all the time, because you are divine. I'm not good at this at all. I'm terrible, as a matter of fact. I can't ever make a speech. I'm the world's worst, but I must say I'm overwhelmed. And I'm so happy. I've never had so much fun in my life. And I want to thank you so very much. It means a great deal to me to have you come here tonight and have you more or less honor me. It's astounding and wonderful and thrilling. I'm no good either at making speeches. I said that a minute ago. I can sing a song. When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole so
tenderly. Don't get peeved if your husband bluntly tells you you're too stout. Don't you pout. And for heaven's sake, retain a calm demeanor when a cop walks up and hands you a subpoena. If the groom should take a powder while you're marching down the aisle, don't weep and moan because he's blown. Just face the world and smile, 'cause when you're crying, don't you know that your makeup starts to run and your eyes get red and scrappy? So face your troubles, have yourself a little fun, have a ball. Forget it all, forget the troubles, come on, get happy, keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, the
Joey Brown just told me to say a word. I don't know what to say, except I do thank you again. And I've never been more honored or more thrilled. And I hope we'll all meet again very soon. Bye.